going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices and give you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Ben Standing's with us, as he is every Monday and Friday, and a little bit more during draft week. They selected last night Josh Connerly Jr., tackle, Oregon, at number 29 overall. Adam Peters said they were not going to move back, even though there were plenty of opportunities to do so if Connerly Jr. was on the board. At Ben Standig, read him at The Athletic, listen to his podcast, Standig Room Only. So not necessarily a player that we talked a lot about. What was your reaction?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's the guy that I talked about and wrote about a bit here and there, but, you know, you get caught up in all the, you know, there's so much going on and, you know, when they're picking 29 and what are the scenarios, and you still know who's going to be on the board or whatever, but the idea of taking offensive tackle is something I definitely talked about. I'm pretty sure you and I did, and I talked about it with others over the last few days, because it just makes sense. You know, the Laremy Tunsil move was a you know, seismic move and a sign that they really felt they needed to upgrade the offensive line. And then so Brandon Coleman moves to right tackle, and it's like, okay, cool, Brandon Coleman is the right tackle. Where I came at a couple, two or three weeks ago, was like, well, wait a minute. On the one hand, they've already moved him once, and it's not like they were kind of vague about what his role was going to be even when they did it. So, sure, if they do nothing else, Brandon Coleman a right tackle, that could be interesting without question. But if there's somebody there in the first or second round, well, that player would, in theory, would have been picked higher than where Coleman was, so why wouldn't that person potentially be an upgrade at what is an incredibly important unit, the offensive line? And then when I looked at, took like a 30,000 view look of the draft boards, and, you know, our guy Dane Brugler, he had Josh Connerly, number 23 overall, but he had him as like his fourth offensive tackle. And he basically had six offensive tackles in his top, like 26 or something like that. And then the eighth best offensive tackle was 79 on his board. In other words, if you wanted to get one, you had to go early. And if you look what happened last night, there were eight offensive linemen in total that went in the first round. It sounds like that a lot of teams were calling to trade up to try to get not necessarily ahead of Washington. I don't know if they knew that Washington was doing that, but they were trying to get into the first round to get Connerly. I think even one of my mock draft scenarios, I had a deal where the Bears, who we know need a left tackle, and thinking they wouldn't get one in the first round, but they have a good ammunition on day two that they could trade up to Washington. And that's thinking, hey, would the Commanders want to trade down, you know, with that mindset, get more picks. So I even was making those types of trades for a Connerly in mind. At the end of the day, though, the offensive tackle class is pretty thin, and Peters essentially acknowledged this yesterday when I asked about it, whereas the edge class, which obviously has been talked about the most, runs a lot deeper. And there are guys that were still on the board today. There'll be guys on early day three who will be considered pretty good edge rushers. It's just that because there's so many guys at that spot that are considered viable, it just, you get more guys get pushed down. Or on the flip side, the offensive tackles and the offensive linemen got pushed up yesterday. I mean, seeing guards go as high as they did is an indication of that as well.
Right.
So, I think it's a combination of playing the board, and then obviously, look, clearly they like the talent. They didn't, you can't just force the position. That's where you get into trouble. They like the talent. Connery was a 2-year starter at left tackle. He had some really good evaluations. I've seen pre-draft, athletic. He did a good job, Peter pointed out, against a head-to-head matchup against Abdul Carter, the Penn State defensive end who went third. So there's a lot to like, I think, with this pick. And at the end of the day, the number one priority has got to be help boost Jaden Daniels. And this is in line for doing that.
Yeah, the people that don't like it, let me just tell you, if Josh Connerly doesn't start like early in the season, and let's just say Wiley does start and Coleman's the guard or whatever, or Coleman starts, that's not a reason to freak out. Like, often these guys take a little bit of time. He's not going to play left tackle. He's going to play a side in which he played at the Senior Bowl, but didn't actually play in games that mattered. So there could be an adjustment. I'm just throwing it out there. And you made a really good point, about just the idea that maybe Connerly and Simmons were the last of kind of the tackles before you probably were going to have to wait a little bit on tackle. And so 8 offensive linemen went in the first round. 3 guards, 3 true guards, went in the first round. That's definitely unusual, I think, although more people are emphasizing interior offensive linemen. Just out of curiosity, because we were texting back and forth, but I don't think we did it right before the pick last night. Who did you think they were going to – were you thinking Scorton was a chance? What did you think was going to happen when they were on the clock? And there were a lot of, opportunities, including 2 guys who had fallen in Will Johnson and Mike Green.
Yeah, I mean, how do I say – so I think there's like sort of 2 parts of my brain. There's the mock draft. Oh, this guy's rated higher than this guy. And, we talked a lot about edge rushers, so my brain is sort of going there. But like the part of my brain that says, how do you run, how do you maneuver a draft, kind of went through what we just discussed in terms of like the positional values. Like there's just some positions that are just going to be, harder to find later, and, to maximize the full value of the draft. Like I will say, and I wish I had sort of leaned more into this, every time I did a mock draft, because I always do 2 rounds because they want to get a feel for what else is behind, the first round. So, for this idea, where the strengths and weaknesses are, where the tiers are, things like that. Every time I went to the second round, if I took defensive end first and went to the second, not that there weren't some potentially good players, and not that whatever I was thinking in terms of player order was accurate completely, but I was always struggling more to find the best fit, I thought, for the team. Whereas if I went any other position in the first round, tackle, running back, or whatever, the second round pick always felt better because I would typically go with an edge rusher and, that guy, I've heard good things, like the UCLA defensive end, Femi Oladeja was a guy that I always kind of gravitated towards him, and there's a few other guys. So, I wasn't sitting there. We were waiting in the auditorium, waiting for the pick to get announced and talk to the player, and I had to write stuff. So my brain wasn't sitting there on my couch thinking what's going to happen. But, as much as we talked about Ezeraku and Scorton and some others, this, again, was a draft where these guys could go 19, 20, or they could fall into the 40s. This is just how this year is. And, the first round, by the way, really played out that way. I would say that, honestly, the pre-draft buzz, so to speak, was way off this year in terms of like the order of players and like the teams, like what teams would potentially do. But part of that is because of the unsettled nature of this class. Like there was just no consensus on anything in terms of where certain players were valued and so on. So it was just hard to figure out what they were going to do. But we knew the obvious positions, and to me, tackle was kind of one of them.
Yeah, there were two things that I thought about when the first round ended last night. Number one was I thought I should have considered more about the trade-up opportunity for a quarterback being before the Rams pick, so with Houston. Because there was a lot of conversation about the Rams selecting a quarterback. And so that was the spot, not 29, not below the Rams, if you wanted Jackson Dart or Shedeur Sanders. And the Giants went right in front of the Rams. And then the Rams promptly traded to the pick because I have a feeling that they were probably interested in Jackson Dart. And then the other thing, too, in listening to Adam Peters, is that Kansas City was always going to be in the market for an O-lineman if there was a good one on the board. And to your point, if you didn't take a tackle, you know, early, especially after we saw eight linemen go off the board, three guards, five tackles, by the end of the first round anyway. And my sense is, and I'm wondering if you feel the same way, when he said we had opportunities to move back, but we weren't assured that Connerly would be there, Kansas City had him teed up at 31. They then traded back because they didn't, you know, with Philly. Philly traded up one spot to get Campbell. I'm not so sure if they had both stayed in the same spot, they wouldn't have gotten the player that they wanted. But do you think that that's the team that he was probably eyeballing as if we were to move into the second round, pick up another pick, we lose Connerly to Kansas City?
I think he was concerned if they traded out, the team that they traded with would take Connerly. I mean, like, people didn't necessarily know what Washington was looking to do. It was, you know, they're pretty stealthy. Again, because of this rush, you know, of linemen, that, you know, this is what teams were looking to do. I mean, I definitely wrote about it and talked about it on my podcast, and probably again with you, that, like, sure, we all talk about, hey, if there's quarterbacks there, that's how teams trade up, whatever. But when I started to look at the board and seeing the depth or the lack thereof at tackle, my tune changed to both quarterback and offensive tackle. And like whenever I was doing my mock drafts, in where I would come up a scenario with trading down, including some of the ones I put on The Athletic, it was never to a team. Well, maybe I shouldn't say it was never to a team for quarterback. It was always for offensive tackle. It was for the Browns or the Bears or teams like that, because you know either Shedeur was going to go earlier, or like if like the Giants. Like, I know Adam Peters said the other day he's not afraid to make trades within the division, and maybe he wouldn't have been afraid of Jackson Dart, but like, you don't trade with a team in your division who's going for a quarterback. That will haunt you if that guy works out more than another position. So the Giants and Washington were never going to make a trade, right? So who's making a trade to trade up for Washington? It would have to be somebody wanting likely a different position, and that position would, for the only other one I saw that made sense was offensive tackle, because defensive end, there's still tons of guys out there. So, when three tackles went in the first nine picks, I mean, I think that also helped set the stage. It's not like they got pushed back and therefore maybe then Connerly is there in the second round, you know, that type of deal.
Yeah, I mean, there was a bit of an expectation certainly on Campbell and Membu going in the top, you know, seven or eight. I don't know if Kelvin
like Banks. He got there late this last week. Again, it's always important to remember, and there's no real such thing as risers and fallers. All that is really happening is the public, which is that includes the draft analysts we all talk about, they are miles behind the teams. Like, right. At the end of the day, they don't know about medicals. They don't know about necessarily all the background checks. If the people who were on the outside talking about the draft were as good as some may think, they would be in the buildings, not talking about the buildings. So,
if people really were hitting at 75% on their wagers, they wouldn't be selling the picks. They'd actually be retired somewhere. Real quickly, though, before we get to tonight, what really surprised you, if anything, about the first round? And I understand what you just said. We don't know anything, and that's true.
Sure.
But I have one thing that surprised me. What surprised you?
Well, I mean, this isn't my answer. I mean, the Travis Hunter trade, just like, wow, okay, you know, that's just a bold trade for both sides. But Atlanta trading back in the first round for James Pierce, even if you said to me, hey, they're comfortable with whatever concerns or questions there might be, but they love the talent, okay? But to give up a first-round pick, like the Giants didn't give up a first-round pick for Jackson Dart, a quarterback.
Exactly.
To give up a first-round pick, look, and the crazy thing is the Falcons, they have needed pass rushers forever. Last year, instead, they took a quarterback, and we know that whole story. So I just thought that was a bizarre one that they went for. They gave up a first-round pick, and that was the one to me. I was like, what the heck?
Yeah, I mean, look, for all we know, like you were saying, the due diligence and what it uncovers, maybe Pierce Jr. was a much better situation than everybody had talked about going into it. That doesn't change the fact that you gave up a lot more to go up to a spot below the spot the Giants went up to draft a quarterback. Doesn't make any sense to me. That was the head scratcher. All right, let's focus on.
By the way, with Washington. So Peter said he was nervous about Connor going off the board as high as the top 12 picks that he was concerned. And obviously there were a lot of linemen. I think one thing that was probably a bit overlooked in general last night was the good fortune Washington had that the two trades right in front of them, Houston at 25 and the Rams at 26, were two teams that people were pegging four offensive lines potentially. Texans, everybody had that, and the Rams, it was sort of like they could. And the fact that those two teams traded out and the teams that came in went quarterback, pass rusher, may have been what ultimately gave Washington and Connerly, because if those teams stay.
If Connerly had gone to, let's just say, Houston, who stayed at 25, who do you think the pick would have been for Washington at 29? Do you think he would have accepted the offers and traded back?
I would guess. I mean, I don't imagine it was like Connor was the only guy that they were like completely confident that they would pick. But I feel like that the trade back, always feels like it's the way to go. Just depends on what we don't know what the trades are. But yeah, I would guess trade. If not, again, the pass rushers that we've talked about were there, and so probably that. But yeah, I just think that scenario really may have saved them if they wanted Connor.
All right, so the fact that they took an offensive lineman and they haven't taken an edge, and there are a bunch of edges left, plenty that we've talked about over the last several weeks. What do you think happens tonight? First of all, do they stay at 61?
Well, if they want more picks, I think this is the one you have to trade down. Getting more picks is not just saying, they got two extra sevens. I mean, seventh-round picks are people too, but that's not typically where you're going to find the real contributors for a team. So if you want to do that, I think they got to trade at 61. And the good thing is in this draft, again, where the talent gap is pretty minimal, the first 100 or 150 picks, is that if they're in round three, round four, maybe early round five, they'll still get people that will get a lot of praise and attention. But, this guy is, legit. I mean, with defensive ends, there's so many guys. I think, again, Dane Brugler had, I believe, 24 in his first four rounds. So it's not just that, that shows that there's guys who are going to get picked later here, later today, tomorrow, that that were worthy of being picked higher, but they just get pushed back to the depth. So I would think if they stick and pick, I would say edge rusher remains the most likely need, but cornerback is there, and at some point I would still think they're going to get an offensive playmaker. But trading down to me would be, it's hard to say it's my best bet, but that to me would seem to be what Peters wants the most, unless there is another prospect that they say, hey, if this guy's on the board, we have no choice but to take him.
Let's just say they stick at 61. Do you have somebody mocked to Washington at 61?
Well, now it gets tricky, right? It's one thing the first round, but things go off the rails when it comes to figuring out what teams are valuing now, or which players. But just to name a few guys that we mentioned, some of these pass rushers, I would think that Ezeraku is off the board. I would guess that Scorton's off the board. I mentioned Oladejo from UCLA, somebody that I believe they've shown interest in. So I think he would make sense. But he was even a guy that was getting some light first round buzz at various points, so he could be gone as well. I don't know that Benjamin Morrison, the cornerback from Notre Dame, is going to be there because he's in one of these many cornerbacks that has had the top, again, possible first round buzz. But I think that's somebody to keep an eye on.
Yep.
I've talked before about Siobhan Revell, the cornerback from East Carolina. First round talent, but he's older than the average rookie coming off an ACL. Maybe he slides a bit to that point. A random flyer I'll throw out here, this is on the offensive side, is TCU wide receiver Savion Williams. He's kind of like a bigger, faster, younger Debo Samuel, so maybe that's ultimately a bit redundant, but I think that could be a really, really, really fun chess piece for a guy like Cliff Kingsbury to have. And I'll just throw in as a side piece, this guy is repped by Cliff Kingsbury's agent, which has nothing to do with what Adam Peters will do, but I'm just saying there's got to be even a little bit more of a insight into this player, who's probably more of a round three guy, but you know, I think there's some possibilities there. And then, you know, this is what, you know, then when the best player available kicks in. If there's a safety that they like, if there's a, even tight end, you know, now you can start getting a little more into that. Defensive tackle may be the deepest position in this group. And while we wouldn't think of that as a need for necessarily 2025, you know, beyond Johnny Newton, that room is very open next year. So, you know, that could be something they say, hey, the position value here is too good, whether it's a guy that's a Shamar Turner. This was a Darius Alexander from Toledo. Like, there's a few guys that I think could make sense. So, again, it's I think trade down makes the most sense, but they'll have options across the board at all the positions.
What would make the fan base pull their hair out the most at 61? Another offensive lineman, clearly.
Oh, 100%. I don't know. I mean, it's probably more along the lines of like somebody with a big name they've heard of is sitting there, and instead they take a player at another position or the same position that is less heralded, you know, smaller school or just didn't play out, wasn't on your television every Saturday, something like that. I mean, look, I'm probably the wrong person to guess what's going to outrage the fan base, because I look at everything to me would be reasonable that they could attack almost any position. So I don't know what would be annoying, but you know, something that's not a celebrated position and a player that doesn't get a lot of hype would probably be, but I would imagine would annoy people.
Yeah. All right. Good job. Appreciate it. I'll talk to you this weekend.
Yeah, man. See you.
Ben Standing, everybody. Tonight will be interesting. The opportunity to trade back. Remember, they've got 61. That's at the end of the second round. So if you trade back, you're probably out of the second round, more likely than not. And what you're hopefully into is the third round, because you're not in that round right now. And then maybe you are also in the fourth round for a second time. With a trade back. The positions that I think they'll do well on Saturday or late tonight in round three are positions that we've talked a lot about. Edge, corner, running back, and even wide receiver to a certain degree. But they may feel like their best opportunity is to trade back and take another tackle or another guard. That would just be funny at this point. I think we have a really good shot of a corner, edge, running back, wide receiver tonight with one of those picks. I'd be actually very surprised if it doesn't come from that group, although I guess I wouldn't rule out tight end. When we come back, a longtime NFL coach absolutely loves Josh Connerly. You'll hear what he said next. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. That's why Dollar Shave Club makes the razors, but you make the rules. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Dollar Shave Club products are now available everywhere. Or visit their site right now for 20% off $20 or more and get your products delivered right to your door. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/shaveup and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more. And remember, whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
This season, let your shoes do the talking. Designer Shoe Warehouse is packed with fresh styles that speak to your whole vibe, without saying a word. From cool sneakers that look good with everything, to easy sandals you'll want to wear on repeat, DSW has you covered. Find a shoe for every you, from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, New Balance, and more. Head to your DSW store or visit DSW.com today.
Baseball's number one digital destination is the MLB app. And this app's got game, like game highlights, live games, fantasy games, and more.
The gem of a game!
This is baseball your way, with stats, scores, breaking news, and daily custom content that hits every time.
A monster shot!
Because here, you choose the teams and pick the players you want to follow.
All year long.
So when they catch it on the field,
what a catch!
You catch it on the MLB app. Download today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Something Adam Peters said about Josh Connerly against the Big Ten's biggest opponents coming up in a second. But Mike Tice, do you remember Mike Tice? Mike Tice played many years in the NFL as a tight end, played in Seattle for several years, played here for a year, played in Minnesota, and then ended up becoming a head coach of the Vikings for about four seasons, and then stayed in the league as an OC and as an offensive line coach for years. By the way, if you didn't know this about Mike Tice, he was a quarterback in college at Maryland. He was a 6'7" quarterback in college at Maryland in the late 70s, early 80s, before Boomer Esiason arrived, and then became a tight end in the pros. Anyway, he was on a podcast that I think his son was doing last night for the draft. He loved Josh Connerly. This is a longtime offensive head coach, coordinator, and O-line coach Mike Tice talking about Josh Connerly.
Period. Number one offensive lineman in this draft for me. I don't do it full time like everybody else does. I was given this special assignment, so I'm doing this special assignment. But
family favor.
I didn't get a chance to look it up, but whoever's an O-line coach at Oregon has done a tremendous job. This kid plays with great technique in all areas of the game. Pass sets, run game, out in space, footwork, down blocks, hand usage. This guy has a lot of traits. When you have that many good traits, you're a first half of the first round for player. You're because he has so many good traits, that to me makes this guy a premier offensive tackle in this year's draft. I really like this player. There's not a lot to not like about him, unless he's got some blemish or some acne that I don't know about.
There you go. About as high a praise from a former NFL, coach and player as you can get on Josh Connerly Jr. So there were a couple of other sound bites from Adam Peters that I wanted to play. The first one was just the idea that Ben talked about, and I don't know, maybe this was Ben's question. Sorry if I didn't know this going in. But Ben brought up the fact that, we had a run on offensive linemen in the first round, in part because there was a big drop-off after, say, 7, 8, 9 guys, and then the rest of the tackles in particular. And he was asked about sort of the draft depth at that position and how it impacted the selection of Connerly Jr. Here's what he said.
Yeah, you always look at that. I think that's a good question. And yeah, we did think that, after Josh, there was going to be a little bit of a dip in terms of the guys that we really liked. And it wasn't a huge dip, but you're right. You do look across the board and say, okay, we can get these guys later. That shouldn't be the driver of your decision, but it also makes for, you need to feel more comfortable about doing that.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, you don't want it to be the full driver of your decision, because then you're really thinking more need, right? If you're like, well, the tackles aren't going to be there until the fourth or fifth round, there's such a big disparity, we got to take a tackle now. It should be about best player available, which it was, but if it's close with another best player available, and let's just say it came at the edge position, defensive end position, well, that position, according to everybody, is deep, and you're going to be able to get one in the second round, the third round, the fourth round in this draft. But Ben mentioned something that I didn't consider. I think the Chiefs were always looking at O-line. And Connerly Jr. had been actually mocked to Kansas City several times, which I went back and looked at after last night. But Ben suggested that maybe the trading partner would be the team that would have taken Connerly Jr. at 29. So Peters didn't want to risk it. He wanted to, you know, stick where he was instead of accepting an offer to trade back and hope that he would be there. This was a question just about the overall emphasis on defense, and certainly I would say that most fans, most of us, believed that going into this offseason, defense would be the focus. In the draft, defense might be a big part of the focus. Certainly an edge rusher, an edge run stopper. Here's what he said with respect to pressure in this draft to get defense.
I think it's just looking at our board and picking the highest player on our board. So I don't think there's any pressure to pick a defensive guy, except I'd feel bad for Joe Witt a little bit. But he was extremely supportive of this pick, too. He's a great team guy, all jokes aside. But no, there's no real pressure to do that, to force a pick on the defensive side of the ball. It's just trying to pick the best commander for us.
There you go. They do need defense, but then again, maybe they feel like they did a lot in the offseason heading into the draft in free agency, and they like maybe what they have coming back. That's always something. We've talked about this for a while. The whole idea that last year's draft is already kind of in the books in terms of what they have, that's just false. Most rookie players don't make their big impact, if they're going to make a big impact, in their first season. So what they think of Johnny Newton and Jordan McGee and Dominique Hampton and Javonte John-Baptiste, who I was told a couple of times last year, they actually liked the player. And he got some run, remember, in some games during the course of the year. That draft, last year's draft, often ends up being the creator of your new contributors the next year. And the guys you draft this year then end up being more contributors the following year. Of course, you want your first rounder to be able to contribute right away. You'd like your second rounder to be able to contribute right away. In Washington's case last year, their first pick obviously contributed in a major way, and two of their three second-round picks contributed. Newton and, of course, Mikey Sanderstil, who had an excellent rookie season. This was Adam Peters back on Josh Connerly talking about the top talent that he faced during his college career, specifically in the Big Ten.
Yeah, that's a great question. That was something I failed to mention when I started the presser. But I think, the way he competed against Abdul Carter, he went toe-to-toe with Abdul Carter, who's the best pass rusher in the draft. He did really well. And he did really well against a lot of really good players. He, you know, played Ohio State twice, and they were getting break speed off in the second game, and he was still competing to the very last second, and that showed a lot. And just those types of things you see in them. When we have metrics where our R&D department does a great job of giving us metrics, how do they perform against high draftable players? And so he performed really high against high draftable players, and that lined up with what our eyes saw. And so those things make you really, not just his skill, but the fact that he will go toe-to-toe with those guys. He's not going to freak out. He's not going to panic. He's not going to do things that he doesn't normally do when he's, face-to-face with a really great player.
There you go. Two things about that. Abdul Carter, he actually dominated, all right, just so you know, in the Big Ten title game. JT Tuimoloau from Ohio State, he faced twice. Ohio State got the better of Oregon, you know, big time in the second game, in the playoff game. But he played great players in the Big Ten. There were a couple of other players that he played that were really good in the Big Ten as well. But I also wanted to mention this part of his quote, because I always find this interesting, because I know coaches and scouts really evaluate players and how they play in games that are out of control score-wise, especially when you're on the team that's losing. And he said he played Ohio State twice, and they were getting the break speed off them in the second game, and that was in the playoff game. Remember, Ohio State just absolutely buried them in that playoff game. It was 34-7 or whatever before Oregon knew it. 41-22 or something like that was the final score. And he said, and yet he was still competing to the very last second, and that showed a lot. Those types of things you see in them. That is Dan Quinn and Adam Peters, man, to a T. That's what they didn't like about Jahan Dotson last year. They didn't like that he wasn't playing to the whistle on every single play. They traded him. They're looking for those, you know, qualities. I'm not saying that that should be the driving quality. It isn't. But they want competitors, man. They want dudes that are playing the entire way and aren't looking at the scoreboard and saying, yeah, I'm done. And the idea that he played well, and the R&D department does a great job of sort of evaluating how they do against other highly draftable players, and that he lined up and dominated Abdul Carter, was obviously promising in their eyes. I think they got a good player. I mean, time will tell. Who knows? He's not going to play left tackle. He's not going to go up, you know, week in and week out against the other team's best player. It doesn't always break that way. And you just never know. And these positions in particular are always tough. All the positions are. But they drafted a guy that they love from a competitive standpoint, from an athletic standpoint. And they felt they still needed to invest in the protection of their quarterback and I think this is important, invest in their ability to be more versatile in the run game. You know, getting better opportunities for people other than the quarterback to run the football. All right, when we come back, what's next? I'm going to give you kind of 5-6 players that I've talked about already in my breakdowns of some of these players. I certainly don't think I need to focus on O-line tonight. I would be shocked if they went O-line, especially that given that they essentially, you know, he essentially said that position's depth isn't great, and it kind of fell off the cliff after the first round players were gone. But I've got some ideas on players that they'll be looking for tonight, and I'll give you some of those when we come back. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, the team980.com. We're free and live on the Odyssey app. You can also check us out on our stream on our YouTube page, where we'd ask you to subscribe and also hit the like button for us.
All right, last night, despite having multiple offers to move off the 29th pick, Washington Commanders stick and pick, and they select Josh Connerly Jr., the offensive tackle out of Oregon. He was voted the best practice player of the week at the Senior Bowl, and Washington's coaching staff liked him so much that Cliff Kingsbury left a note on Adam Peters' desk, quote, "I stopped by, take Oregon tackle. Thanks, Cliff." Moving on to the Giants, Abdul Carter was selected at number 3. They also traded up with the Texans for number 25 overall to draft Ole Miss quarterback Jackson Dart. The Cowboys reached up for Alabama guard Tyler Booker, and the Eagles traded up with the Chiefs to select Jihad Campbell at 31. The Nats wrapped up the Beltway battle last night. They lost to the Orioles 2-1. They take on the Mets tonight on the Team 980. To the ice, the Caps are looking to take a 3-0 series lead at Bell Center. Alexei Protas missed both games so far due to a cut on his foot. He joined the team yesterday for the flight up to Montreal and joined them this morning for morning skate with the whole team. Looks like we will see him tonight. Logan Thompson will get the start pregame at 6:45 on 106.7 The Fan. This update is sponsored by the Team 980 YouTube page. Just open the app, type in the Team 980 and hit subscribe. Kevin Sheehan is live from 10 to 1 and Craig Hoffman from 4 to 7. Don't forget to like the stream and turn on notifications to stay up to date on all things DC sports. And that's what's trending.
All right, let's talk about tonight and maybe even this weekend a little bit. But focused on tonight, and assuming they stay at 61, a trade back, picking up some good value and extra picks would be nice in this draft for them. But let's assume for a moment that they're on the clock at the end of the second round, and the second round goes faster, you know, than the first round because you've got, I think it's instead of 10 minutes, I think you've got five between picks. So the second will fly, and the combined second and third will make it a late night. But Washington, as of now, doesn't have a third round pick. So I'm going to go the position groups that make the most sense. I'm going to exclude quarterback. I'm going to exclude offensive line after they drafted Josh Connerly. Let's go to defense and talk about the players that may be available at 61. I would assume that Ezeraku is going to come off the board pretty quickly. I think Mike Green, somebody's got to take a flyer on him in the second round. He's too talented. But there are a couple of players that I've mentioned. JT Tuimoloau from Ohio State, I think, might be there at 61. He might not be, but to me, he is a great combo of rusher, run stopper, size, strength, and he played so big in all of their big games, especially during the postseason. Those four playoff games, he ended up with 6.5 sacks and a forced fumble. You go back to his sophomore year in the game that he had against Penn State, off the charts. I just think he is a big-time playmaker, and I would imagine that if he's on the board at 61, I'd be surprised, A, but B, he would have to be in consideration. Nick Skorton has been Ben's guy all along. He hasn't been picked. I would assume he goes before 61, but certainly at 61, it's better value for Skorton than I thought it would have been at 29 overall. I really like Landon Jackson from Arkansas. He is one big dude, and he has some athletic ability as well at 6'6", 270, somewhere around there. Again, I don't know that he'll be there at 61, but we'll see how these edge players come off the board, along with, you know, some other positions that teams are going to be focused on. And I'd add one that I didn't spend a lot of time talking about, pure pass rusher at this point. Another guy like Ezeraku, who's just a little bit light at 245, 248, somewhere around there. But Josiah Stewart is a guy that I could see them liking as well. And perhaps a better chance of him being available at 61. And if I didn't mention Femi Oladejo from Ohio State, UCLA, that's a guy I've talked about before. So those guys, in terms of the edge guys, I don't know if they'll all be there. Somebody's going to be there from that group when you get to 61. Corners. So I know that there is a corner or two that might be on the board that I think they'll like. I actually think Benjamin Morrison from Notre Dame, look, the injuries are the big issue. And, you know, you're talking about a guy that had some issues this year and missed a big portion of the season because of injuries. And that will be, you know, the issue with them. Two hip surgeries, I think, in 3 years, something like that. But he's an outstanding player, an outstanding, you know, leader, et cetera. The size is solid, and I think they'll like the player. But the player that I've talked about a lot, I can't imagine that they haven't spent some time considering Darian Porter from Iowa State, given how much they are in to RAS scores, you know, relative athletic scores. He had the third best in the draft. He's 6'3". He's got the longest arms of any corner, or among the longest arms of any corner. This 6'3", 200, longest arms, the best overall, you know, RAS among corners, plays special teams, relentless competitor. The only knock against Porter is, what took Iowa State so long to play him? Because he was basically just a special teams player on Matt Campbell's roster until this year. But all of the intangibles check with Porter. He's been mocked more in the third round. I can't imagine that he makes it to the third round. Porter is a guy that I think could be in play at 61, and I wouldn't discount Benjamin Morrison from Notre Dame. Let's move to wide receivers. One of my favorite players in the draft after Porter is Kyle Williams from Washington State. He's been mocked, late second and third. I'm not sure there's a better separation guy, a better route runner, at this point in the draft. I think he'll be there. We've already talked about Luther Bird in the third. I didn't think they would take him if he had been there on the board in the first round for the same reasons they traded Jahan Dotson. He's going to be long gone, I would assume. I think Jalen Noel, who I like a lot as well from Iowa State, will be gone as well. But a guy like Kyle Williams might be there. And to me, he's a guy that will end up being a big-time starter. And by the way, he can play in a lot of different spots. He can play inside. He can play outside. I think he's going to be a very productive player. Finishing up with running backs, this could be the round they look at it, but they can certainly get somebody on day three as well. If they're looking this round, I think Judkins will be gone. I think Henderson will be gone. I really like Trevor Etienne. I've talked about him. I really like Bashaul Tutin from Virginia Tech. He's more of a day three pick, based on the way the board or the mocks are considering. But this is going to come down to preference. I've talked about Damian Martinez now for 2 years. I'd be surprised if he's not off the board tonight. And it wouldn't surprise me if they like Devin Neal from Kansas a lot. Those would be some of the backs that maybe if they got to tonight. I'm glad they did not take a running back at 29. I'm very glad they didn't do that. Two running backs did come off the board as projected. Genty and Hampton went in the first round. If Caleb Johnson were there, he's probably projected, mock-wise a little bit higher than, a guy like Etienne or even a guy like Martinez or Devin Neal. They're going to have a lot of choices at 61 tonight and a lot of players that really fit what they have drafted on. Athletic scores, leadership ability, smart, high IQ. Look for some of those players. I just gave you a bunch of them at the four positions that would seem most likely. Tight end's not out of the question, with a guy like Arroyo or a guy like Mason Taylor. Still on the board. I don't know. Mason Taylor, I don't see making it to 61. That's it for the day. We know who the first-round pick. He's Josh Connerly Jr., and they probably have their starting right tackle for the future and maybe a distant down the line starting left tackle. I had no problem with it at all. Benefit of the doubt, Kev, working these days. But I like the pick. Back on Monday with everything else they do.